from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you live from the Republican National Convention in Tampa. By all accounts, if Mitt Romney could, he would talk about one thing in this campaign season: the U.S. economy. Its travails, its woe, its failure to launch under Barack Obama, and his plan to fix it. President Obama says he's doubling down on an old failed strategy. Mitt Romney says he's the CEO teed up for the turnaround. This hour on Point, Mitt Romney's plan for the U.S. economy. You can join the conversation. Has Romney got the recipe for economic comeback or something else? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we will hear from top Romney economic advisors Glenn Hubbard and John Taylor. We'll hear pushback from Bill Clinton's Labor Secretary Robert Reich, and we'll briefly look forward to Paul Ryan's big address tonight. Joining me first here in Tampa is Ben White, Wall Street reporter for Politico. He writes Politico's Morning Money column on finance and public policy. He's all over the economy. Ben White, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
Lay them out just for us real quick. We're going to dive in with a little bit with Hubbard, a lot with John Taylor, the pillars of Mitt Romney's economic plan to save America, as Ann Romney said
last night. The turnaround team, and we'll get Paul Ryan tonight. The pillars are a cut in marginal income tax rates of 20%. That's the first thing he wants to do. He wants to take the corporate tax rate down from 35 to 25% to make, as he says, America more competitive globally, the tax rate in the United States. And he wants to reduce spending. He hasn't said exactly how he would do that, but the principle there is to get spending to no more than 20% of gross domestic product. So marginal tax rates, a cut of 20% across the board, corporate tax rates down by 10%, spending to no more than 20% of GDP. He wants to take Medicare and turn that at least partially into a premium support program, a voucher program, in addition to traditional Medicare. So those are sort of the broad brush policies. Lower taxes, also wants to reduce regulation and reduce spending as a percentage of the economy.
Regulation, so lower taxes, less regulation. Where does that come in? I mean, the details, everything is in the details.
Everything's
here.
In the details, and the regulatory pieces of it would come, you know, after he's elected.
He said repeal Dodd-Frank.
Dodd-Frank would be the first thing. That's tough to do as an entire piece of legislation. He would go into it piece by piece. He would look at some of the new regulations on derivatives. He would look at a number of different things. You're not going to get a full repeal of Dodd-Frank. That's just not going to happen. But he would attack a number of provisions under Dodd-Frank that he says are bad for the banking industry and are bad for American competitiveness. He would look to reduce regulations on small businesses, probably some environmental regulations in there. His broad theme is that the regulatory burden is choking off our economic recovery, slowing job creation, making it more difficult to start new businesses. He'll cite the number of new businesses that are starting in the United States is going down under Barack Obama. And that's the general approach.
It's a highly political season. There's a highly political reception to these very broad strokes. Republicans at this convention, you know, are deliriously, rapturously wrapping themselves around it. Democrats, you've heard, they're throwing stones saying this is just going back. Is there a consensus among economists, among the people that you cover day in and day out about whether or not the stuff is there? He's got a 59-point plan. Yeah. Do they see the stuff of a turnaround there?
Well, certainly the more conservative economists do. You're never going to get a consensus among economists. You're always going to get on the one hand, on the other hand.
Yeah.
So there is no, I don't think, real consensus there. I think the one sort of uniform criticism of the economic plan is the lack of specificity, particularly on the domestic spending cuts, how he would go about doing that. And he says he would not increase the deficit at all.
Even though he's cutting taxes.
Even though he's cutting taxes by 20% and 10% at the corporate rate. So the question is, how do you do that? How do you cut taxes with that magnitude and not have it increase our $15 trillion debt?
He says he would take away exemptions.
He would take it, right, but which
Martin
ones?
Martin Feldstein writes today in the Wall Street Journal that would work, but which ones?
Which ones?
Not
are you talking
out.
About the mortgage deduction, which people love? Are you talking about charitable giving? Are you talking about carried interest? I mean, there are a number of ways you could do that and raise the revenue to make it deficit neutral, but he hasn't said what they are, and a lot of them, once you actually start talking about specifics, are difficult to do politically.
Ben, stand by. Earlier, I spoke here in Tampa with top Romney advisor Glenn Hubbard, who served as chairman of George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors, and along with John Taylor, who joins us in just a moment, co-wrote the Romney Program for Economic Recovery. I asked Hubbard about President Obama's economic moves, the budget crisis last summer, and what growth he thought Mitt Romney could produce.
Let's remember, the president put us on a cliff. The first 2 years of his presidency, he had a Democratic Congress. Anything he wanted to do in the long term, he could have done. He chose not to. he turned away his own Bowles-Simpson commission, bipartisan commission, pretended they
True.
Didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a president who cares about tax reform. Have you heard anything from the president in this campaign that suggests he would support tax reform? I have not.
If we have a Romney presidency and he gets something like what he would like as an economic program in this country, and he gets cooperation from Congress, let's say. Let's say it's a Republican Capitol Hill. What kind of growth can this country hope for?
I think if we change policies that would be not only about tax reform, but about spending restraint, about regulatory changes, and importantly, cleaning up policy uncertainty, we could create 12 million jobs in his first 4 years, and we could return America's growth rate to its potential or higher in the near term.
Put a GDP growth number on that.
That means GDP growth of 3% plus.
In the first term.
In the first term.
12 million new jobs. He sees Barack Obama and raises him. 3%, 3+% GDP growth. Well, that's Glenn Hubbard. Let's talk with another of those top advisors to Mitt Romney. With us here in Tampa is John Taylor, professor of economics at Stanford, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, a top economic advisor to Romney, co-author of that white paper, The Romney Program for Economic Recovery, Jobs and Growth. John Taylor, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be here. Thank
what
you.
Do you think about it? 12 million jobs in 4 years, 3% plus growth. Is that that's your pal, Glenn
Absolutely.
Hubbard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when you think about this, is this recovery from a very deep recession has been one of the weakest we've ever seen. If we just had a recovery, a normal recovery, we'd see numbers like that.
But it
that.
Wasn't a normal recession. They said it's a financial
yeah,
recession. And those take longer to come back from.
Absolutely not.
Oh.
American history is very clear. Deeper recessions, faster recoveries.
Well, not, but it's the,
deeper I mean, the, recessions, faster recoveries.
Deep, but this has been portrayed as something, this is a financial collapse instead of an ordinary business cycle recession.
Financial crisis, you come back even faster. That's what the American economy has been. So people that say deep recession, financial crisis, slow recovery, that is not what the history tells us. And that's why we think it's policy. It's these short-term stimulus packages. It's the additional regulation. That's what's throwing this economy off course. And that's why it's so important to get a policy which is stable, tax reform, get the debt down from growing so fast, reverse this spending binge. It's been an incredible burst of spending. Get back a little bit down.
The stimulus packages and more.
Yes.
Okay, 59-point plan to do that, but there's been a kind of universal sense that there's a lot left out of this. The Economist, pretty conservative magazine in its own right, says that Romney's economic plan, you've got a part in this, ignores virtually all the difficult or interesting questions. They said your white paper is like 50 Shades of Grey without the sex. You must have read that. Let's get down to details. What, you know, if you're going to cut marginal tax rates by 20%, how do you balance that without making the deficit worse?
The idea is standard tax reform. In 1986, we had a bipartisan tax reform. It reduced those tax rates, broadened the base. We need another one like that. We need a bipartisan plan to get marginal tax rates down. And in addition, spending has exploded. In 2007, federal spending as a share of GDP was 19.7%. In 2007,
mm-hmm.
Romney wants to take it to 20. That should not be so hard if you just think about it logically.
But it's a huge cut. That's $500 billion is the latest number I heard.
That is really getting you back. That's reversing a spending binge. If you were a family, your budget got out of line, what would be the first thing you do? Well, let's go back to see where we were just a few years ago. Was life that miserable? No.
But, of course, we've got all the boomers retiring now, flooding into those big entitlement programs, and
Absolutely.
That raises the cost just as Romney and Ryan, if it were them, would trying to be bringing them down.
And then in the longer run, there is no question that entitlement growth is exploding. And both parties recognize that. President Obama has recognized that. The idea is, what do you do about that? And Romney and Ryan have a plan to reduce that explosion way out in the future. Remember, they don't do anything. It's 55. It's left alone.
But stick with the
exemption.
And
they get that down by a reform that gives people, patients, doctors, a chance to make those decisions rather than the federal government at the center deciding what the price of medical care should be, what the quality, the number of MRIs, you name it. It's going to be decided in their plan by the people that know what they're doing.
You're going to cut taxes. How are you going to not have then an even bigger deficit? You want to cut spending. That's hard to do. You'll try. But even so, you've got lots of even Republicans, Wall Street Journal today saying, don't do this primarily on the basis of cuts. Do it on growth. How do you Are you going to take away
both.
Are you going to take away the mortgage exemption?
You do both. You reduce, in terms of the tax reform, you reduce those marginal rates and you expand the base. And just like any tax reform, how you expand the base is a part of the negotiation. And that's what Governor Romney has proposed.
Expanding the base, meaning in a way take away some of the exemptions so you get more revenue there. That would
Absolutely.
Be part of that.
Absolutely.
And like what? Why doesn't he say what?
Because that should be in a negotiation. That's exactly what you do. Here's the principle. You sit down at a bargaining table, a negotiating table. You lay your principles. Principles are standard tax reform principles. We've done this many times before. Reduce those marginal rates, expand the base, and then that's how it's going to work.
Ben White.
In terms of spending, y'all, same thing with spending. As I say, part of this is spending.
Sure.
The debt is exploding.
Yeah.
You have to take care of the debt. We haven't taken care of the debt. There's a big debt cloud at the convention.
Is it principle, Ben, that keeps those details a little fuzzy, wait for the negotiation, or is it politics? Those are going to be hard nuts to swallow.
It's almost 100% politics because they're hard to swallow, and some of them are very popular. As we mentioned before, the mortgage deduction is very popular. The charitable giving is very popular. When you get into those details, that's when you start getting hit. That's on the other side. I mean, to Romney's defense, it would be politically difficult for him to lay that stuff on the table and then subject himself to all sorts of criticism
Sure.
from the other side. But at the same time, if you're going to say, I can cut these taxes at this magnitude and promise people that, without telling them at all how you're going to do it without adding to the deficit, you run into a credibility problem. So I think what he has is a very difficult situation where he's promising a lot, not saying exactly how he's going to deliver it, and you've got people really wanting a little more information.
Glenn Hubbard says 12 million jobs, 3%+ GDP growth. Sure, that would be great, but not easy to get. Here's the plan. We'll continue to look at it. John Taylor, please stand by. Ben White with Politico. Listeners, you can join us. How do you understand what Mitt Romney would do with the American economy? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Tampa, Florida, and the Republican National Convention. We are talking this evening about Mitt Romney's plans for the U.S. economy, the issue number one at this convention, and for an awful lot of American voters this year. With us, John Taylor. He is a top advisor to Mitt Romney on the economy and his plans. Ben White is with us, Wall Street correspondent for Politico. You can join us. How do you understand what Mitt Romney would do with the economy? Are tax cuts and deregulation the ticket, the way to hit restart, the real stimulus package? Is a CEO, this CEO, what we need? Are you excited by his vision, or is Obama right that he's doubling down on the old failed strategy, as Obama likes to say? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Want to know what Ann Romney thinks about Mitt Romney running the economy? Here's an interview aired August 16th on NBC's Rock Center.
We have a reason why we're running, and it's because I believe in my heart that Mitt is going to save America, that economically we are in such difficult times, and that he is the person that's going to pull us through this.
It's going to save America. What does Mitt Romney think of President Obama and the U.S. economy? Here he is, Grand Junction, Colorado, this summer.
I just don't think this president understands how our economy works.
Simple as that. He likes to put it in just that simple a term. The Obama administration is pushing back. A campaign ad released this week features Bill Clinton going after Mitt Romney's economic vision.
This election, to me, it's about which candidate is more likely to return us to full employment. This is a clear choice. The Republican plan is to cut more taxes on upper-income people and go back to deregulation. That's what got us in trouble in the first place. President Obama has a plan to rebuild America from the ground up.
To cut from cut taxes from the top, and Obama's administration has been making a lot of that. We've got callers on exactly that point. Jason in Lexington, Kentucky. Jason, thanks for calling. You're on the air. Hello, Jason. Are you there, my friend? Let's get another from Santa Barbara. Jason, are you there? Well, let's go to Santa Barbara, California, and Bill. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I respect Romney's business experience, but I don't think it translates as well to actual governing. I actually believe that Prop 13 in California has really screwed things up, and that they sort of set the trend for the country. Believe it or not, I actually think the tax base, and it's certainly in California, but perhaps across the whole national country, is a bit under for certain people. And I just feel like if we want these things, we need to pay for them. I also think the health insurance should be not for profit, but like a utility.
So maybe something like universal coverage there from your state, John Taylor. Bill's calling from Santa Barbara, says, you know, tax cap didn't really work out. We've got a lot of things to pay for in this country. Why are we cutting taxes? And what about the Obama charge that, and you heard Bill Clinton there saying, why cut from the top in a time when the top has been pretty well off?
You're cutting across the board. 20% is across the board, as you know. It's not just the top. And there's also a very clear statement that any base broadening should focus on the top, should be progressive. And by the way, you know, California is not an example of a state that has a good tax policy. Taxes are very high. People leaving the state. I live in California, moving to Nevada, moving to Texas. The states that have moved to lower tax rates are doing much better. And so we have a clear, it's good to have some calls from the states to show that. But, you know, when you talk about returning to failed policies, we've had the last 3 years of old-style failed policies. Those are the kind of policies we did in the 70s. And they caused the mess. That's what we've been doing for the last 3 years. Old-style failed policies. Stimulus packages, short-run things, not sustainable recoveries. We got to get to the policies that will create a sustainable recovery. And you talk about 12 million jobs in a skeptical way. If we don't get 12 million jobs, that unemployment rate's going to stay high. And it's a tragedy.
No, listen, 8%. We need it. Everybody agrees. It's how do we get there? And people want to poke and prod at this policy right now, right, because Mitt Romney's put himself up for president of the United States. You say Obama's got an old failed strategy. Of course, that case can be made, and we've heard it loud and clear. But we did go into the ditch in 08, and we went deep in the ditch.
We went deep in the ditch, and we're coming out of it hardly at all. And the policies that we put in place are so different than the policies in the early 80s, where we got out of a ditch just as bad, even quite frankly, worse, came out of it because of the policies that work. These strategic things, longer-term tax reform, stop with the short-term stuff, try to get the debt from exploding so much. There's a new set of policies that we need, and that's really what is in the Romney-Ryan plan.
You say this isn't a different kind of recession, that financial crises are not different. But we've had Ken Rogoff, economist from Harvard, on this show. He's written a whole book about it, saying recovery from financial crises take as long as 6 years. He's gone back to the panics in 1893, a slump that lasted till 1898.
You know, the return from 1893 recession was very rapid, much faster than this one.
93 to 98 doesn't sound rapid.
We had a fast expansion, and then we had another recession afterwards. That's what we're worried about now, another recession afterwards. No, the truth is American history is very clear, and I'll repeat this. The deeper the recession, the more rapid the recovery. And Kenneth Rogoff is a fine economist. A lot of his evidence comes from other countries, different periods of time. Systematically, there's studies. Michael Bordo at Rutgers, famous economic historian, has shown how in American history it's very clear the deep recessions are fast recoveries. This is the unique time. This recovery is the worst we've seen based on the depth of the recession.
Ben White, where are your biggest questions here?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that you brought up Bill Clinton and the ad that's running now, because obviously he's their most effective surrogate on economic issues. And if you want to look at the last time that we had robust job growth, was under Bill Clinton. And this was the total under his administration was 30 million new jobs, something like that. And his approach was some tax increases on the wealthy, some modest middle-class tax cuts at the outset of his administration. We had a budget surplus. We had enormous job growth. And that's the Obama message that he wants to send. And that's why you're going to see Bill Clinton playing a big role in Charlotte, is to say, these are the policies we want, not George W. Bush's policies, which created an enormous deficit and put tax cuts on the rich. I mean, that's I think, what he's going to try to talk about and why he's running a Bill Clinton ad right now.
Let's get a call from Tessa in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Tessa, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. I just have two comments. I'm finding it interesting that Mitt Romney wants to defend that he's paid at minimum a 13% tax when someone like me who's making less than six figures is paying 33%. And the other comment I just wanted to make is I finished an MBA just as the market was tanking from the Bush administration, from the deregulation and people taking advantage of the financial markets. And I've been 7 months unemployed. And that's just crazy when a person like me cannot get a job.
So you're looking back to what that collapse cost you and raising the question of why should a big guy like Mitt Romney be paying 13%? He said minimum he's paid over the last 10 years when Tessa's paying, you know, 30-plus percent. What about that, John?
Well, I don't know the circumstances of either, quite frankly. What I think is
she's making under six figures. He's worth, you know, way north of, you know,
big time. I can't comment on the circumstances, quite frankly. But what I do know is that we have a progressive tax system. We also have incentives in our tax system, which are good for economic growth. And what I would say, and I really very much sympathize with the people who are unemployed at this point, What we need more than else, more than anything else, is a faster growing economy with lower unemployment. And if you think that should be the overriding concern, it is a real tragedy. We have long-term unemployment, the highest we've
Absolutely.
Ever had. And so what you want to do is focus on that. And we do know from experience that if you lay out a strategy, stop all this short-termism, get marginal tax rates, keep them from going up. At least let's not raise taxes. How could that possibly be a good policy? That's what the administration is proposing.
Well, they're saying raise taxes most on people who have the most, and you've got a lot of listeners online who are saying yes, please.
And you know from this convention that a lot of that is tax increases on small businesses. That's what it's doing. Why would you want to do that if you want to create jobs? It's just beyond me. Why someone would say raise taxes if they're really concerned about unemployment?
Well,
it just doesn't make any sense.
Most small businesses are not in those really higher categories.
The big job creators are.
The big
If you want to talk about the employment, the fraction of employment, they are in that category.
Boy, I feel sometimes like we're in these endless loops around these fundamental dynamics of the economy, and it's tough to break out. Americans try and figure it out, but they hear it both ways. John Taylor, please stand by. Ben White joining us right now from Berkeley, California. Robert Reich, Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, now at University of California, Berkeley, author of Beyond Outrage. Robert Reich, thanks for joining us. What do you see in the Mitt Romney economic plans for the U.S. economy?
Hi, Tom. Well, it's very difficult to see very much because the hardest questions have been avoided. I mean, the devil is in the details. And obviously, everybody likes the idea, at least most people like the idea of reducing taxes and cutting spending. But the question is, exactly how are you going to reduce taxes? What are your methods for base broadening? I mean, with due respect to John Taylor, these are political questions. They do have to be worked out in political kind of systems in our democracy. But unless
that's what
you,
we're doing right
leader,
now, isn't it?
Well, unless you, right. unless you are somebody who's running for president, will put out there the specifics, the kind of the details, the what loopholes are going to be closed. Is it the mortgage interest deduction? Is it the charitable deduction? Is it the carried interest loophole? I mean, what loopholes actually are going to be is being proposed to close, and what are you actually going to cut? Then you're without those, you're in a kind of never-never land.
Never-never land, but you can see the broad strokes here. I mean,
well, the broad strokes, Tom, are the same broad strokes that Republicans have been offering for the last 45 years. Cut taxes and cut spending. But we don't really understand anything specific. I mean, I was very privileged to be part of the Clinton administration, and we did create, or at least presided over an economy that created 22 million net new jobs. We did that by raising taxes slightly, particularly on the wealthy, investing in education, infrastructure, research, basic research and development. We had a plan. That plan was more or less put into effect, and that plan did generate results. Well, Bill
Robert
Clinton
Rice-
ran on that plan.
Put yourself in American voters' shoes here. I mean, they're going to hear from Democrats next week. They're hearing from Republicans this week. Mitt Romney's got a broad plan. Now, there are a bunch of details that aren't there. John Taylor says work them out with Congress once you're in the White House. But Americans have to decide now, and so they've got these two sort of big approaches. Mitt Romney says cut taxes, deregulate, and, you know, let's go. Barack Obama, how would you describe what he's proposing, Robert?
Well, first of all, Barack Obama wants to raise taxes on the very wealthy. This is not going to cut off entrepreneurship. I mean, if you just go back to the tax code we had under Bill Clinton, which is basically getting rid of the Bush tax cuts, we are not jeopardizing the economy. That Clinton economy did very well. And secondly, what Barack Obama wants to do is keep the Affordable Care Act, keep the Dodd-Frank Act, because after all, Wall Street went berserk up until 2007, 2008. We need the Dodd-Frank Act because if we don't have it, Wall Street is going to go berserk again. In fact, there's some evidence that Wall Street is back to its old tricks. The Accountable Care Act is critically important. 30 million people were not otherwise covered, but that cost the medical system enormously because they'd get coverage by going to emergency rooms that we'd all pay for. I mean, these kinds of and I think there are other things that can and should be done with regard to the environment, create incentives to move away from a carbon-based system. I mean, half of the country is burning up this past summer. We know that there is such a thing as climate change. Anybody who denies that is not looking at the evidence. And that, so simply say deregulate When we see around us what has happened with too much deregulation, I think is just flying in the face of reality.
But how do you bring down that big, big government portion of GDP that John Taylor, Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan point at and say, we can't sustain this over the long term?
Well,
it's just
they're
too
right
much
we
spending.
Can't sustain it. And I think the way to do that is to acknowledge that the biggest cost is health care, Medicare, Medicaid. But it's not Medicare and Medicaid per se. It's health care costs throughout the economy are going up. They're already 18% of the entire economy. Once the baby boomers are all in their senior category, it's going to go up to about 25-26%. And what we need to do is contain healthcare costs broadly. And the way to do that, I think, is to have a single-payer system. Now, Obama has not yet, and maybe he never will, suggest a single-payer system. But if you don't have a single-payer, a kind of Medicare for all, and utilize the bargaining leverage of the federal government to get providers to be more efficient, moving from a fee-for-service system to a fee-for-healthy outcome system, then we are all going to find ourselves with higher and higher and higher budget deficits for years to come.
John Taylor, what are you thinking when you hear that sort of broad description of the Obama approach versus the Romney approach? What are you thinking about these two angles of engagement with our economic problem?
Well, I think the first thing I say is this recovery is going nowhere under the current policies, and I can think of reasons for that. I think it's not so much reducing regulation. Regulation has increased tremendously. The number of federal workers doing regulations has increased in the last few years, the number of pages of the Federal Register. You have measures of the big increase in regulation. And, of course, Dodd-Frank regulates a lot of things that had nothing to do with the financial crisis, things like payday loans. And of course, the health care itself is a big increase in regulation.
Are payday loans and those high rates a good thing? Is that
Maybe. It may be sometimes. Actually, I think, you know, one of the most creative aspects of finance around the world is microfinance for developing countries, and they pay high rates. But the point here is not so much whether that's bad or good. It's nothing to do with the financial crisis and is more regulations. So I think it's really clear that we're doing more regulation than we have. We're talking about increasing taxes. We've already increased taxes a lot. And by the way, the Bush tax cut you talk about, if you repeal those, everybody's taxes go up. That's not the rich. Remember Bush, for example, the lowest marginal rate came down from 15 to 10. So we go back to 15. That's not helping.
Well, that's not what President Obama suggested either.
But
he's talking about allowing the high-end Bush tax cuts to expire while extending the ones on the middle class. So I don't think anybody is proposing that we raise taxes on the lower income and the middle income.
That's what the cliff is.
Obama has said if we give these tax breaks to the high end with your 20%, that's a lot of money up there. It's inevitably, to keep things in balance, going to mean higher taxes on the middle class is the case he's made. I think he's put a number on it, $4,000 per family.
Right. That's the argument that the Obama administration has made. And I think one thing we're not talking about at all here in terms of why this economy is moving ahead so slowly is the housing crisis and the bursting of the housing bubble and house prices and the general wealth of the nation, which is, you know, you cannot lay at the feet of this administration. I mean, the housing bubble burst before they got there and the depth of the recession was created before they got there.
Now, Wall Street blew up before they got
there. You could argue that their response to the housing crisis was not robust enough and it's been piecemeal
in
different ways.
Yes.
Many have. And I think they wouldn't really argue with that. I mean, it's a complex problem to attack, and they've tried a number of different ways to deal with it. But until, you know, house prices recover more than they have, and less people are underwater, and people feel like they have more money in their pocket to spend, you're not going to see real fast growth. And I don't know how Mitt Romney, and maybe Mr. Taylor can answer this, is what's his response to the housing crisis, and how do we get to a point where...
Let me say two things. Every fast recovery has some weak sector. In the fast recovery in the 80s, net exports were weak. You could have said, oh, we can't have a fast recovery because net exports are weak. We didn't say that. What we're saying is there's so many reasons people give. Weak housing, financial crisis, everything except the policy. When I look at it, it's the policy. It's really the logical thing. And I know you're looking for other reasons. Everybody's looking for other reasons. But the truth is the real clear thing is the policy. And because we have so much evidence that it hasn't worked in the past, and it's not working now. That's what the facts, that's what history shows.
We've got 3 years, and we've got years before that as well. John Taylor, please stand by. Ben White, Robert Reich in California. We're talking about Mitt Romney's plans for the U.S. economy. Listeners, you can join us. Would Mitt Romney make it morning in America again? Or 2008 all over again? Is there enough detail in his plans to know, and unemployed Americans, who's speaking to you on the economy? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mitt Romney's plans for the U.S. economy. It's issue number one at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, where we sit right now, and issue number one for an awful lot of American voters. You can join us this hour. Would Mitt Romney turn this thing around or not? 800-423-8255 is our number. Ben White's with us from Politico, Wall Street correspondent there. John Taylor, big advisor to Mitt Romney on the economy, is here with us in Tampa. Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary for Bill Clinton, is with us for just another minute, and you can join us as well. 800-423-TALK. Bob Reich, I know we've just got you for another second here. Look, it's going on 4 years for Barack Obama, and a lot of people, very far from Mitt Romney's inner circle, are, you know, wondering when and how, if this president stays in office, is he going to turn around and look at saying, well, it hasn't worked. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the answer is that he needs a Congress that's going to cooperate with him, and a lot of it depends on what happens Election Day, not only for Obama with regard to getting reelected, but also in the Senate and House. Republicans
have
said no.
He's not going to get a Democratic House, is he? He's not going to get a Democratic House, right? I mean, is he? That might be his dream scenario, but if he's not going to have it, he might even have a Republican Senate as well.
Well,
some people look at that and say, we can't stick with that gridlock.
Well, if we're at, Tom, if we're at complete gridlock, it doesn't matter who's president. We're in trouble. I mean, the president, whatever the president is, and whatever the president believes, has got to have cooperation. We've got to have less divisiveness in government. We've got to get together and at least try some things. I mean, Franklin D. Roosevelt, at the depths of the Depression, he tried things. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work. I think Americans are getting impatient. They want Congress, Democrats and Republicans, to work together. But let me just say this, and it needs to be said. Paul Ryan, whose night is tonight, Paul Ryan gets the spotlight. He does have a detailed economic plan, and one would assume that Paul Ryan's plan should at least fill in some of the details with regard to the big question marks around Romney's plan. That Ryan plan is very clear. It means huge tax cuts for the very, very wealthy. In fact, the Center for Tax Policy has analyzed it and found that the typical millionaire, that is, people who have earning over $1 million, the average is going to tax cut for people earning over $1 million is going to be about $400,000 a year. And yet, most of the cuts, 62% of the cuts in the budget, are in programs for lower income Americans. This is reverse Robin Hood budgeting with a vengeance. And I think we that needs to be understood. One of the biggest problems in this country right now is massive inequality. Inequality to the extent we've not seen in this country for almost a century.
So what are you for? Redistribution or John Taylor's drive is let's just have more growth and fix it that way?
Well, I think they're not mutually exclusive. I don't see how we can grow if we don't have enough of a middle class to purchase the goods and services that we have that we are capable of producing. Businesses are not going to generate more employment if they don't have more people who are capable of buying. But if 20 to 25% of all of national income is going to the top 1% who don't spend everything that they earn by any means, we're not going to have sufficient aggregate demand, and therefore we're not going to have an economy capable of getting out of the morass we're in. We got out of the Great Depression not just because of World War II, but also because Franklin D. Roosevelt did something about a maldistribution of income leading up to the Great Crash of 1929.
Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary to Bill Clinton, joining us from California. Thanks so much for being with us, Bob. Author of Beyond Outrage. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
John Taylor, what about that? You need demand to make an economy grow. President Obama says we don't have a strong enough middle class, and if you've got an awful lot of wealth locked up at the top, he wants to try and bring it down, spread it around, as he's said 4 years ago, and get some demand in this country to get the economy
you
going.
Need,
what about
it? Of course, you need demand. You need demand and supply. That's what economics tells you. And there's not enough demand for labor right now. Firms are not hiring. That's a lack of demand to employ workers. The way to get that is to give firms more incentive to hire workers. Take away the uncertainty of higher taxes. Take away the increase in regulations we've just had. Take away this short-termism that we've just put in place a policy so firms will hire. They have lots of cash on the books, especially the big ones. The banks are sitting on a lot of cash.
Why doesn't it put us back in the 08 scenario? We went down this path with Ronald Reagan. Then we went down it with George W. Bush. Didn't work out so well. We ended up in 2008. Why wouldn't a Romney approach put us back in that scenario? People don't want to go there again.
Well, you talk about Reagan. That was that expansion, which was almost three times faster than this expansion. You know, it's about 2.2%.
Absolutely.
It was 5.8%.
It's a long time ago, and we've had experience since then.
And we had experience through the 80s and through the 90s, and things worked quite well. We basically now are in this unusual situation where growth isn't enough, unemployment's tragically high, and I think the reason is the policies I just outlined.
But I'm asking you to look at those years, and it's not just a few. It's 8 years under George W. Bush that ended up with a collapse. And what a lot of people are worried about is, do we embrace Romney and go back to that and do that again?
Romney doesn't want to go back to that.
How would he avoid it?
Those policies had to do with regulators not enforcing regulations on the books of the financial institutions. It had to do with a monetary policy where rates got very low by the Federal Reserve. It actually caused a search for yield, so to speak. It caused the boom, which eventually collapsed. Mitt Romney's not proposing anything like that. So people that say they're just trying to mix politics, trying to not focus on the real problem. And the real problem is the policy we have now. No one's saying going back to what created the crisis. If anything, we're going back to what the good policy was in the 80s and 90s.
Let's go to Joanne calling from Los Angeles, California. Joanne, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Taylor. It seems to me that for the last 2 years, President Obama has not been able to get anything of significance through Congress that is a part of his plan. So basically, we've been operating under a continuing Republican plan. There's been no tax increase for the people at the top. There's been no further stimulus, anything of the sort. So we're basically operating under the Republican plan right now. How does Mr. Taylor explain that?
Well, John Taylor, we've been thrown in a deep freeze by obstructionism.
No, I think you have to look at the first 2 years, first of all, where we did have a stimulus package. We did have cash for clunkers. We did have first-time home buyers. We did all those things, and they didn't work, and we knew they wouldn't work. Based on history tells you they wouldn't work. But we did them, and it hasn't worked. So the Republicans, to the extent they're trying to prevent more of those things were destructive, are being constructive by that. So I would say don't sort of somehow blame Republicans because they're holding back bad policy. Give them some credit for holding back the bad policy. We saw how harmful the bad policy was in the first 2 years of the administration when they had plenty of opportunity to pass it, and they did.
Ben White, let's say it is a Romney administration. Are we right back in the gridlock if he doesn't take the Senate? If you've still got Democrats there, you've got a significant number in the House. I mean, whatever his plans may be, are we right back in going nowhere land?
I think the answer to that is probably yes, but not necessarily. I mean, I think you can make an argument that, particularly if Romney gets a Republican Senate, which is up in the air right now. But I think there could be a window and opportunity for another grand bargain type negotiation where Mitt Romney will really want to have a deal in place so his entire administration is not overtaken by budget shutdown, government shutdowns, and debt ceiling negotiations. I think you can have a situation in which the parties can get together and talk about Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, tax rates. I don't necessarily think he'll be locked into everything he said in the campaign, particularly on how much he wants to lower tax rates. A lot of that stuff was born of the Republican primaries, where he needed to go to the right, and he needed to appeal to the supply side wing of the party, and people who really wanted some red meat. I don't think Mitt Romney in his heart is really there. I think he's a pragmatist. I think he is a person who wants to get a deal done. He's a deal maker. He's a Wall Street deal maker. I think he's good at bringing people together. I think he could do that. And I think you could get a situation where even with a Democratic Senate, you could have some type of long-term agreement on rates of taxation, the growth of entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare. Maybe it's Pollyanna. Maybe it's pie in the sky. But I think there are enough, cool heads that could prevail. And Paul Ryan is a very smart guy, very well-versed in this stuff. There's going to be a lot of people in a Romney administration that could bring parties together and come up with some sort of long-term solution. I hope that's the case because we certainly need it.
John Taylor, here's Mitt Romney. He may be a pragmatist. A lot of people look at him and say, yeah, maybe he's got a whole agenda that he's not really putting out there, more pragmatic than the politics he had to embrace in the primary to get where he is tonight as we sit here in Tampa. But on the other hand, it's a very conservative Republican Party. Could he be boxed in? I mean, here's Bloomberg, a Business Insider magazine. Big picture of Ronald Reagan on the front of the magazine, and across it they've got socialist written. And they say, look, Ronald Reagan couldn't do what Ronald Reagan did today with the Republican Party that will surround the White House. What about Mitt Romney's room to move if he should win? Room to move, or is he boxed in by his own party's conservative element?
He's not boxed in at all. I think to say that the where the Republican Party wants to go, in the sense it's back to Reagan, is a good thing to do, quite frankly. That's when we had this fast growth.
They're saying even Ronald Reagan couldn't have pulled off his policies today, that the party itself has become more conservative than that.
That is completely wrong, quite frankly. It's completely wrong. The policies that the party wants to have, the people you're hearing at this convention, are the policies that worked in the 80s, and they worked in the 90s, by the way. They're just not working now. And those are the policies are of a more stable policy. You don't have all these short-term stimulus things that they always keep talking about wanting to do more. You don't raise taxes all the time. You try to get spending down like it came down in the 90s. You have a welfare reform, which puts responsibility to the states like Romney wants to do. So those are things that were done in the 80s and the 90s, by the way. This doesn't have to be so partisan. And the things that work that we've seen in the past are the things that Romney wants to do, and I think he can implement for the reasons that we were just talking about.
Ben, can you make those cuts to bring it down from 24% government spending of GDP to 20 or 19? Those are big, big cuts. It gets into Medicaid. Paul Ryan talks about that. We'll hear more about that in just a minute. Can you do that without political blood in the streets in this country? Can you make the scale of cuts that Mitt Romney's talking about, or would he also not really follow through completely on that? So, you know, push it on out, maybe in the second administration, maybe in 2016.
It's going to be very difficult, but not impossible. I think if you look at the Ryan plan, which Mitt Romney hasn't really embraced, but, you know, he does do this, and he does it largely through a lot of cuts to Medicaid, not so much Medicare, kind of leaves Social Security where it is, and then really attacks domestic discretionary spending in the military and just about every discretionary spending program you can think of. I don't think he would be able to accomplish that. A Romney administration would be able to accomplish all of that. It's going to be too draconian, and there'll be too much opposition to it. I think you could do some of it. I think you could get closer to a matching of the spending and how much we tax. You get, you know, away from this gap of 25% of GDP spending and only 15% of taxation. I think ultimately there'll be some meeting in the minds between those two things. Whether you can get to the 20% that Romney wants to get to, I don't know. But you can certainly, I think, find a common ground between those two things that gets us closer to balance.
We're going to spend a few minutes here looking at what we can expect from Paul Ryan tonight as he takes the stage here in Tampa. I want to thank both of you for being with us. Ben White, Wall Street correspondent for Politico, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
And John Taylor, advisor to Mitt Romney, co-author of the white paper, The Romney Program for Economic Recovery, Growth, and Jobs. If it's a Romney administration, we're told we may see you in that administration, John. I know you like being a professor. Who knows? We'll wait and see. Thank you so much for joining us.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Great to have you. With us right now, Neil King, political reporter for The Wall Street Journal, and we are looking forward to Paul Ryan's big speech tonight. Hi, Neil. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So here comes Paul Ryan. He likes to talk policy. He's the wonk on Capitol Hill. Is Mitt Romney going to let him do that tonight on this podium, or is it something else we should look forward to?
Well, I highly doubt that he's going to be a wonk on stage in front of a national audience. I think he's, you know, he's let out a few of the tidbits in advance of what he's going to say. He's going to, you know, put forward this being a big choice election. I think the main question is how big are they really going to go in terms of details outside of talking. You know, we're out here to reduce the size of government. We're going to reform entitlements programs, as opposed to sort of making the big wager on whether people really want to, you know, jump in on slashing the size of government in the way that they propose.
Mitt Romney's campaign has distanced itself from Paul Ryan's very extensive and explicit budgets and plans that are all over Capitol Hill in recent years. What does that tell you? I mean, he helped excite the Republican base, but is he going to be a partner in governing, in looking at the economy with Mitt Romney, or, you know, Mitt Romney drives the ship and Paul Ryan is his ombudsman to Capitol Hill?
I don't know. I think Paul Ryan has actually given Romney a focus and a sort of ballast that he lacked before that. Not just, I mean, I think here, being in Tampa, it's most palpable, not necessarily on the details of the economic plan, which we're going to see going forward, but how he's kind of galvanized his party around him. You see that in talking to people on the evangelical right, among Catholics, among the Tea Party factions. It's really interesting. Now that, I mean, the Obama campaign is loving to say that this is the Ryan Romney ticket because there's so much more to pick at on the Ryan side. I think tonight is going to be the start of Ryan's whole push to make himself as sort of palatable as he can in front of people that are not just hardcore Republicans.
But we've got this dance of the seven veils now where he's got so much detail right out there. Mitt Romney doesn't. He can suggest that he favors this or that in the huge Ryan buffet, but keep his own cards close to the vest. And it leads people to, you know, not be sure what to think of what comes down the road if it's Romney in the White House and Paul Ryan over by the Naval Observatory.
Now, it's going to be interesting coming out of the convention because, for the most part, campaigns have usually declared more or less what they are, and then they go in to run on that. And we're kind of beyond the elaboration moment a little bit. I mean,
Is that what Romney intended all the way along? I mean, many people are saying this is less detailed than we typically get from presidential campaigns than we've maybe ever had. Was that the strategy?
Well, he certainly has been. Last night, you know, we heard Chris Christie saying that Mitt Romney was the man of hard truths. And, you know, a lot of us were looking around kind of like, I don't know whether...
Which one was that?
Yeah, I don't think he's really been the candidate of hard truths. I think the big question is, will they decide to go into September and lay out some real specifics and say, take a gamble on us? You know, we're at this pivot point in our economy, in the definition of what it is to be America, and whether we can make all this, you know, spending and taxation system work in the imbalanced way that it is now. And this is how we plan to do it. And come with us if you want to do the sort of big thing. While their accusation towards Obama, which I think is in part accurate, is that he's running the more kind of status quo, kind of fear-based campaign somewhat. But I don't know whether they're going to really take the big gamble.
The big gamble being to lay out the detail and say, here's what we want you to buy. That leaves it a kind of gamble for the American public, except they've got the big compass setting out there. Less regulation, lower taxes, and once again, Americans left to sort of make that decision. Is that the way you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, they're the one, you know, in picking Ryan, what really redefined this race was it did make it a very big choice election. And they're using, you know, in tonight, in his speech, he will talk about this being a choice that's being put before the American public. And that, of course, was a pivot away from what had been the sort of gamble that Romney was making to date, which is that this is overwhelmingly going to be a referendum just about Barack Obama and his handling of the economy. How clearly they lay out what the choice is, as opposed to a sort of a stylistic rhetorical choice, this is the kind of way that we're going to cut entitlement programs, this is how we're going to cut the budget, and this is how we're going to rejigger the tax system, remains to be seen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Fork in the road is the framing at this political convention. Neil King with the Wall Street Journal, thanks so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.